Blog Talk Radio. And welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. And, you know, sometimes we do that. We put a little extra music in there. A lot of people like the music and kind of sets the ambiance and the tone. So, you know, we gave you about 25 minutes worth of it. So hopefully you're ready. We've got a great show tonight. We've got a full house. So thank you to all you folks that are there. And if you haven't read the episode info, tonight on Continue Mission, we will focus our discussion on the International Bill of Rights. And it's actually called the International Bill of Human Rights, and how diplomacy and democracy can bring these basic fundamental human rights to the rest of the world and solve the ever-increasing immigration problems that we have that have Americans concerned about the illegal border crossings and overloaded immigration camps, all of these things that you people are worried about. If you're really worried about illegal immigration, then you will want to listen to this show. If you really are concerned that, you know, all of these refugees are coming in here and it's not going to have any room for you or anything else, and you're worried, you're concerned, then you need to be listening to this show right now. So you're sitting there listening right now. Go call that friend. Go call that friend that you heard just talking at work the other day about, my God, all these immigrants coming across the border. Get them on this show because we're going to tell them how to fix that problem right now. We're going to tell them how to fix it, you know. We're going to tell them how to fix it. So listen to this. Immigration camps are filled with people fleeing war-torn places that have zero respect of human rights. So the first question I'm going to ask is if you were living in a country that had cruelty, a dictatorship, no democracy, no rights, you think you don't have rights now, then you go live someplace else in Africa, or you live someplace else in the Middle East, or you live someplace in Central America. So anyways, hold on a second. Hold on a second here. Okay, folks, I just wanted to check our sound to make sure that I had good comms. So anyways, so all these people are fleeing these war-torn countries because you have this dictatorship. You have all these things. You have this absence of human rights. And Father Michael and Rich, and we're going to have Omar Hassan back on here. And Omar was on here last week and was talking about his country of Djibouti. Great, great show. Record-setting numbers. A lot of you people are on here tonight. See, you, when you get to talk to Omar and you get to understand why he's here because he's trying to build up the support so that he can bring awareness to what's really going on in his country and then hopefully, you know, establish a level of democracy. You know, they want to establish a constitution. They look to America as the example. And we should be thankful for that and not, you know, push back on that, because here's the deal, folks. They could go to Russia or they could go to China and you say, hey, can you help us? They'd be happy to help them turn themselves into a level of dictatorship, fascism, communism, you know, ultra extreme socialism, whatever you want to call it. So here we have, you know, an opportunity to make a difference. This is why we should be supporting the enforcement of the International Declaration of Human Rights and applying diplomatic pressure through sanctions and elimination of all U.S. funds going to any country that violates these basic human rights. That's what's causing your borders to overflow. The people coming in from Guatemala, the people coming in from Venezuela, the people that are coming in from Africa, the people that are coming in from Haiti, the people, man, they're just people trying to get out of the gunfire. They're just trying to, they're wanting to give their kids a better life, just like you would want to do. Okay, so it's not, you know, MS-13, all of that's all the only thing crossing the border. No, some of them are fathers and mothers and children that are just trying to get the hell out of the way. And they would be happy to go back to their country if they knew they could go back and get some support, or at least at the very minimum could count on the United States of America, Canada, Great Britain, and all of the other – I was looking on there. It says, the people that are listening to this radio station primarily now are U.S., U.K., Canada, and Sweden. Believe it or not, we have a lot of Swedish listeners on there. So all of my Swedish listeners that are on here today, hey, thanks for being on here. We really appreciate you listening in to Continue Mission, because you see what's going on as well. You know what's going on. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So all of these immigrants that people are trying to demonize, it's like they're really just people like you and me that speak a different language, and they're trying to find a better place to live, or they're trying to get some place so they can get their breath and then hopefully go back to their country. Not a single one of them that I talk to say, I would rather not go back to my country ever again. You know, they would love to go back, but they can't go back and face execution by firing squad. Would you do that? If you were kicked out of the state of Texas and they said, if you ever come back, we're going to hang you, what would you do? Would you go back to Texas? No, you wouldn't. You'd be looking for another place to go. And basic fundamental human rights are what we see that are missing. So we had a conversation before the show, and Rich is going to talk to you about it as well. It's when you see an absence of democracy, you see the presence of abuse. An absence of democracy, see a presence of abuse. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And we can apply diplomatic pressure, and how can you be part of that? You can be part of that. You can be part of that by putting the pressure on our elected officials. Last week, Omar Hassan told you, and there is 100% factual evidence that shows that the United States of America gives $63 million a year to the country of Djibouti. You think, well, where is Djibouti? Why is that important? It's in the Horn of Africa. It has a huge port. They could literally set up a naval base there, which the Chinese already have, by the way. And if they wanted to, they could run a blockade to the Red Sea. And you talk about your friends in Israel, you really care about Israel, then you should care about Djibouti. Because if you let that fall to the communist Chinese, well, they'll control that shipping lane. They'll control what goes in. They'll control what goes out. And it is going to what? Cost us to have to go to war again? Why don't we just do something simple like, you know what, we're not giving you $63 million anymore. We're cutting you off. We're taking all of our aid away from you until you clean up your act. No, we're not going to send troops in there. We don't have to send troops in there. You don't have to. You have people from Djibouti that are willing to stand up and fight and take back their country. But they don't want to fight against American weapons and $63 million of American backing in a country that has less than a million people. You're $63 million bucks. You know, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. So anyways, and there's other money that's coming in there as well. So let's bring on, let's see here. We've got Father Michael. We've got Omar. And we've got Rich, Omar, and Rich. All right, do I got you now?
Yeah.
Or do I got Omar?
I keep getting cut off. I don't know what it is tonight. I think I live in West Virginia because I'm losing connectivity.
You know, that's a whole nother show, friend, because I was so – I'm going to say it. I was so pissed off today during three Zoom calls driving through West Virginia, and it's like it just keeps cutting off. And these were important calls, and I'm sitting here thinking, you know, here we are, 2021, almost 2022. There should not be a place in the country that you shouldn't be able to drive and keep your cell phone service. Well, I mean, it's
actually
just,
what's
it's
funny
ridiculous.
Is that when I'm talking to people in West Virginia, they know where the dead spots are. They're saying, hey, I may lose you. I'm doing
that. Yeah, I've said that a thousand times. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You will never have serious business enterprise in a state that does not solve that problem.
Right.
You know,
right,
and that's just
right.
That's just the facts. So I've got a meeting set up with the governor, and you know, a lot of people talk trash about our governor, and you know, he is kind of funny and does some goofy things sometimes, but he really is a pretty good guy. You know, I mean, he has some problems, you know, but he's a good guy, and I think that he sincerely wants to do the right thing. So I got a meeting with him, and we're going to talk about this and some other things. But human rights. So we got Omar Hassan on the phone. You still on there with us, Omar?
Good evening, guys. Yeah, I'm here. I hear you guys.
And Father Michael Pacella. We got a full house tonight.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, you know, we've got a full house. So let's get right into it, because there are a lot of people that are listening right now. And I'm talking about some probably, you know, I'm seeing things really cranking up. I'm really interested in seeing these numbers, the Canadian and the UK numbers that are on here right now. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Thank you. Hey, to all of our friends in Canada and the UK, God bless you. Thank you for being on here. We're thankful for you to be on here. On Continue Mission, so we can have some discussions, because ultimately we're going to be talking about diplomacy that would ultimately affect you, you know, and your troops. So,
James,
so let's see if we can get that.
Could I just read a couple of short articles from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? There's just a few of them that I chose just to set the tone. Article 1. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Article 3, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the security of person. Article 4, no one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms. Number 5, the last one I'll read, no one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. You know, we're talking about rights and duties here, or rights and responsibilities. And I just think that those few articles set the tone for what we want to discuss tonight.
Beautiful. And you know, that's exactly, you know, why – you know, I brought Omar back on, because, you know, as we're talking about this, you know, let's, you know, we really need to get tough on these countries that are violating basic human rights. We really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we don't have to put troops on the ground. I mean, sometimes, you know, some of the stuff you see that are so horrific, you know, I mean, I admit it. I sit there and look at it, and I think, you know, we should just go over there and just kick the dog crap out of those people for doing that. But, you know, you can do something else. You can take away that money. You can take away that support. And you can essentially choke them out. And we should support. And I put a link on here to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So if you go to blogtalkradio.com, you look up Continue Mission, you'll be able to find that. And I also put a link to independence.org. which is a website and a group that Omar and I are working with to try to bring awareness to the issues, not just in Djibouti, but everywhere. It's crazy. We are setting up that country for another horrific experience like we saw in Rwanda if we don't do something now.
Right.
And we got to put an end to it. Omar, how's it going? How's your family doing?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say hi to everybody and who's listening to us. I want to thank you guys to bring our voice, you know, further. And I had, you know, a lot of interesting numbers today that I have, you know, prepared to educate, you know, our friends and our listeners and share with them our, you know, our knowledge, you know, and our information. And as you said, to explain why we have, you know, these big numbers of immigration. Yeah, my family is doing great. They're still in the, you know, in the country, and the government still refuse to deliver the passport for my kids. It's been now more than 1 year, 1.5 years. I didn't tell, you know, the family since January 2020. And this is a human rights violation and children's rights violation, you know, when you don't have the right to travel and just taken as a hostage. But they are living in there with my family, so you can imagine it's not that easy. And especially when you are fighting, you know, for the right thing, and you have, you know, you receive threatening and everything. But we are on the front line, you know, this is our job. Yeah. So this is the last update, you know, they're still, you know, blocked there. And, you know, I asked you, you know, to try to help, you know, to expedite my case and, you know, so they can be able to come here, even if my goal is, you know, to live in my country. But for now, it's not possible. And I can talk tonight. We can talk tonight about what is the real problem, and especially the immigration problem in Africa, when we know that Africa is the richest continent. So, yeah, I can talk about that, about, you know, human rights, and I can give some, you know, numbers and how Africa is rich, but also I can explain why the African are forced to leave their continent, and what's the problem with that, and the relation with the United States, with the diplomacy, and what we can do, what the United States, what everyone can do against that to reduce that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I talked about that. You know that there's people from Djibouti right now, your country, that are in Mexico, you know, trying to get across the border, correct? Into America.
Correct. So, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I was really surprised. Some Djiboutian called me. They said, hey, we follow you, you know, on the social media, on your podcast, here from Minneapolis, the podcast that I do on Djibouti House every Thursday on Tempo Africa TV. And they said, hey, you are a real patriot, and you are among the guys that, you know, are giving us hope. But guess what? Now we are, you know, in Mexico, not far away from the U.S. border. And when we will be catched, hey, we're going to say, we know Omar, you know, the captain.
Hey.
And we know Omar, and we left the country because the country is just not, we cannot live there. There is no freedom, no basic human rights. That's why, you know, in order to survive and have, you know, a better future. So anyway, and I was really surprised and to see this, you know, young people. But you have to know that the national soccer team of Djibouti, they were on a trip for the qualification of the World Cup. So they had to play in Morocco against Algeria.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were defeated, you know, 8-0. So when they were coming back, they were transiting through Paris, to France, through Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So three of the Djiboutian player, They just destroyed the passport, and they ask for asylum at the airport. So you can find that, you know, it's on the on the media. You just have to type, you know, Djiboutian soccer player seek asylum, and you're gonna see that. So two of the three were guys in uniform. One of them were working for the police, and the other guy were from the Republican Guard. And then a friend of us, an Association for Human Rights, French guy that is working with us, the CTD, our coalition, you know, and all our partners there who are, you know, a part of the CTD, helped them. Because the Djiboutian embassy were forcing the French government to send them back to Djibouti. But these guys, they said that we will be killed. And we are seeking asylum because during our service as a policeman, I was forced to torture people. So
right.
The other guys from the Republican Guard said I was also forced, you know, to use force and to arrest people who were, you know, relative to me, and without any legal explanation. The problem of immigration is when you see that in Djibouti, for example, you have the only one permanent U.S. military base who are paying $63 million. And, you know, a country for less than 1 million who is ensuring the whole logistic of Ethiopia, which is, you know, 80 million people. And this country is still, you know, one of the poorest, you know, half of the people are living under $2. So what is the problem? The problem is the lack of accountability, of transparency. I mean, the American, they have to make sure that this money is reaching the people, but this money
right.
is not reaching the people. A small family is, you know, taking advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same scheme of maneuver in all African countries. So I can
right.
give you some good numbers so we can educate, you know, the listeners, you know. So
well, I'd like to ask you this question. I'd like to ask you this
yeah.
one question because I think this will set the tone. If you could go back to your country right now and be assured that you that there is a level of fairness and there was a democracy there, you'd go back, wouldn't you? You'd go back and serve. I mean, I'm just at, you would do that, I'm sure, right?
For sure, for sure. You know, this is my dream, and this is why I sacrificed 20 years of my career. I was battalion commander. I came here for, you know, Command General and Staff College. But at the end of the day, I'm not, you know, and thank God, you know, I'm not a selfish guy. You know, I'm a patriot. I'm, I choose to serve in order to serve, you know, the people, the rights of the people, to defend the flag, not, you know, a family, a small family who took advantage, you know, of all the resources of the country. Our dictator is now the second richest guy in Africa. When you know that Djibouti, the small country, has no natural resources. The only one resource is the geostrategic position. So the American are, you know, in Djibouti since 2003 and are injecting money, $63 million. And you have the French base, military base, the Japanese, you know, the Italian, but now you have the Chinese, you know, since a couple of years, 2013. And you have in total like $170 million, 10% of the GDP.
Wow.
But Djibouti, you have the half of the population. They are living under $2, extreme poverty. You have the half of the population, no jobs. We are depending on electricity, on water, on vegetables from Ethiopia. And Ethiopia is now burning because of the war since 10 months. So this 44 years of independence, Djibouti, they did not see this independence. No, so that's
but
why...
Go ahead.
That's why the American, as you said, you know, you said it, you know, really well, they have to control this money. If they
right.
they choke, you know, the this income, then they can say, hey, you don't have democracy. You don't have,
right.
You don't respect human rights. We have 4,000 military guys who are there, and we are supposed to defend democracy and
mm-hmm.
human rights. That's why you are fighting. We are fighting
right.
terrorists.
Right.
But your policy is terrorizing people and encouraging immigration. That's why Djiboutians immigrated. That's why Africans immigrated.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have access to their resources. And guess what? In every African country, most of them, you have this dictatorship or this, you know, family who are, you know, oppressing and denying resources to their people. They are sponsored by, you know, France, for example. So now what
mm-hmm.
happened in West Africa? In West Africa, yesterday, you know, there were a coup in Guinea, and then there were a coup before Guinea in Mali, which
right.
is, you know, you have the French operational, you know, military there. They're saying that they are fighting terrorists. But the reality is that they are just securing the gold and all these, you know, resources that they are taking from the country. So guess
mm-hmm.
what happened? After, you know, the special force commander took over Mali because people were, you know, just, you know, suffering, they just decided to kick out the French now from Mali.
Mm.
So what happened in Guinea? The same thing now. Another special force
mm-hmm.
commander took over, and you have all the diaspora, the expat politician came back, and he said, hey, guys, you are welcome to come back to the country. So you have all these people came back, and he said, hey, you have plenty of resources. Our country are poor because there is, you know, corruption, and this corruption is supported indirectly by these big Western countries. So
right.
now what happened in Mali, Mali received today 4 helicopters from Russia, and they have signed a contract with Russia, you know, and they asked the French to go out of the country. So
there you
this
go.
This can happen also in Djibouti. In Djibouti, the American can be kicked out because
mm-hmm.
guess what? The American came in Djibouti in 2003, 10 years before the Chinese, and they have the time to force the dictator to implement a democracy. To say, hey,
right.
people, they have to have, you know, the right to talk, the right to leave, the right to the opinion and everything. But no. We have this dictatorship, and you have all these NATO allies who are supporting him. And then now China came, and China, you know, injected $200 billion in Africa. And in Djibouti, they injected a lot of money. And now they own 70% of the country's debt. So we are now in a crossfire between China and, you know, the NATO forces and the dictator. And it can happen that, you know, a war, you know, occur in Djibouti between China and the USA, because it's really sensitive now what's happening in Djibouti. So
I have,
as you said, the only thing is to choke, you know,
there.
And make sure that
Omar, I just was saying, I talked to a gentleman the other day who served in the U.S. Navy for 7 months in Djibouti. And
yes.
certainly we have our people there, as you said, as well. And obviously there has to be a lot of tension with all those different ideologies that are being represented with the motivation of money.
So let's go into the heart of human rights. Now, you know, Father Michael, you actually have taught international human rights, and you read a couple of them off.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when we look at, you know, let's talk about what are human rights, Father Mike. Tell us what they are.
Well, I think
what they mean.
We shared from some of the articles. In other words, you recognize the dignity of humanity and that we're equal. You know, we're made in the image of God and that everybody should be treated the same way, not like their property or chattel, things of that nature. But I thought the first article kind of really typified what's being said. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed from God with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. And I think that there's certain rights we've been endowed with. Now, we have responsibilities and we have duties. And if you read through the whole treatise, you'll see that. The other one that we mentioned, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the security of person. Omar's talking about the lack of security. But I thought Article 5, no one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment. We can't treat each other like animals. We've got to treat each other with dignity. Life is sacred. So every person has the right to flourish. Every person has the right to an education. Every person has the right to medical care. You know, why is it that only the wealthy can live long lives and prosperous lives? And so it really gets down to the crux of the issue, even when it talks about torture. I mean, there were certain things that were in certain country as far as, you know, their culture or their religion, especially toward women, which was torture. And we have to treat everyone like there's a spark of the image of God, that there's sacredness in each person. And unfortunately, all of these things have been violated in the way we've treated one another. We've taken dominion and treated one another as if we were a higher species. Now, you were talking earlier about the aliens and those that are seeking refuge. You know, we have to put ourselves in their position. How would we feel, like you said, about not being able to give our children a better life? Both my grandparents came here to give their children a better life, and I've been a great recipient of it. My parents were born here, but my grandparents came here because there were no opportunities in Italy. And so, you know, there are rights that we've been endowed with. That word is so important. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in the spirit of brotherhood. We need to care for one another. We will be accountable for that. And we just cannot treat people like it's a caste system. Like, you know, some people are better than others, so they have rights to become educated. I don't believe I would have had the opportunity in Italy to have the education that I've been able to have. And we have to allow everyone those great opportunities because we're made in the image of God. People are sacred, and they therefore have rights that have been endowed by God, not given by the state, so they can't be taken away from by the state. They've been given to us by God, and we've got to revere one another, respect one another. Even like when we were in the military, you know, we salute it, or in martial arts, we bow. That's a way of respecting, not worshiping. We've got to respect one another and realize that everybody deserves the same opportunities that we've been given. So that is human rights for all, and we have to fight for that because everybody deserves to flourish. Aristotle talked about eudaimonia. What that means is reaching your potential, flourishing. Well, how can you flourish when you're oppressed, when you're afraid, there's no security, you have no opportunities to grow, you're not nurtured or encouraged? So we have to fight for the rights of others because we have been given to them, and Scripture says, "Who much is given, much is required." So they're fundamental, that each person needs to experience in order to be a full human being.
Rich Kilblank.
Yeah. Well, I guess we could just solve the world's problems by all sitting around holding hands and singing Kumbaya. Is that the answer?
No.
Well, no.
In other words, you know, we can talk about, there is evil in the world. Look, most dictatorships are always, you got to look at, there's good and there's evil. And we're talking about people who are motivated by very selfish greed, and they're going to use whatever tools are available to them to hold on to that power, okay? And they're going to oppress everybody else. So, we can sit there and philosophize about, how everybody needs to treat each other with dignity and stuff, but that ain't going to happen. So how do we fix it?
It has happened. Remember Dr. King said that the civil rights laws wouldn't make the white man love him, but it would force him to respect him. And I think when Eleanor Roosevelt, and they drew this up, this declaration, I think it has put these countries on notice that if you don't act civilized, then we're not going to support you, not acknowledge you as a civilized country. I think we do put pressure, just like Dr. King put on our culture and our society, not by shaming, but by acknowledging that we're all created equal. So I do think we've made progress even since this document, I believe it was 1948 when it finally was completed.
Yes, sir.
Well,
you're 100%
I served in, I did my time in Central America, and we made progress while I was down there, but it's turned to a shithole since, except for Panama. Panama has prospered, but Honduras is like the murder capital of the world, right? Murder and kidnapping capital of the world. But a lot of that is, it's not the government. It's the damn drug cartels that have, Latin America has just been overrun by, we went in there in the war on drugs, and we went after all the leaders, take them out, and they're replaced by the really bad guys. You know, the guys who, the assassins, all right? They had the power. It's like Stalin. So you have the philosophers, the managers like Trotsky, and then you had the guys who trained up, the arm side of it. And they're like, hey, we want to be in charge. We don't want to be serving the think tanks. We're going to kill the think tanks, and we're going to become in charge. And so that's what you saw happen, when Stalin had Trotsky, killed. You're seeing the same thing with the drug cartel. So now it's, the people who made a living at killing people are the ones in charge of the pretty much running things. And as long as the government, basically corrupt governments, as long as they get their money, and they're not bothered with it, they don't care what happens to their citizens.
But, Rich, the prohibitions that we put on Germany through the Nuremberg trials have changed their behavior. Now, we're still there after, 70-something years, keeping an eye on them. But there were certain sanctions that we put on them, and they weren't allowed to do certain things. I do think we can put pressure as a world community on some of these places that have been involved in these atrocities. And I believe that, we're talking about diplomacy, right? We're not talking about armed conflict. I think we have to start there.
Well, for one, we already know we're not going to get involved in any more regime change wars, okay? The armed forces is not going into Djibouti to remove the dictators and replace them with a democracy, because we know it will fail, okay? We can give the people their democracy, and they won't defend it. that's kind of what happens. All right, so
I agree.
Yeah, I do agree, though, you know, the fact that China, who has more land and a port, is only paying $20 million, and we're paying $63 million. We are being gouged on that. And so I think we have a lot of leverage. And when you look at, yes, those straits are very important, but guess what? The Japanese, the French, and the Italians are there. They want to keep that strait open. So it's like, hey, unless, you know, we can go, you know, and it's not us or the Chinese. It's there are other, you know, democracies involved in this, mm-hmm. and we can say, hey, fix your problem, or we're taking our $63 million and spending it someplace else. Yes, we can do that. But something I want to point out, Germany, European countries, how do I say it without being offensive, but they're a little more civilized than the rest of the world, okay? Not mm-hmm. as corrupt. They are corrupt, but they're not as corrupt. It took them grow into democracy. Their first – see, Europe was ruled by monarchies until World War I, and that changed it. And the problem is you had, like, three good examples of – you've got to remember, the first – well, actually, no, I'd say the first experiment, the second experiment in democracy after the American Revolution. But keep in mind, you know, there's a lot of debate that the American Revolution was not a revolution. There was no change. There's no revolutionary change. All we did is we removed the king-appointed governor and elected our own governors, and then we created a central government. An elected government, right? It's just a logical step because we were already moving that way, but Europe wasn't. And so when you look at France, when they get rid of their king, mm-hmm. they replace it with the guillotine, okay? The French Revolution didn't. Yeah. It wasn't a good experiment in democracy, and they had to bring the king back. Haiti is a classic example because right after the American, you know, they're the first country in, or island in the Americas after the American Revolution to throw off the yoke of colonialism, and look what they did with their country. The Haitians are not fleeing Haiti to escape persecution by the gun. There is no social upward mobility in that mm-hmm. country. They come here to move up. And I'm going to tell you right now, every Haitian I have ever worked with in the United States Army was a first-class soldier. And I remember when I got sent down to Haiti in 2010 for the earthquake relief, and I, you know, we had plenty of Haitian soldiers who, as linguists. And I asked one about it. He goes, I said, why? Why? You know, I'm looking around at this wasted country, and but every soldier I see in the United States Army is Haitian soldier, is first class. And he goes, because the good ones are smart enough to leave. And, mm-hmm. you know, they have the adventure. They're willing to suffer to get to this country. And then, you know, when you bring that kind of drive into this country, they're going to prosper. And that's one thing, okay, because, you know, through my wife, my Latin wife, I have known lots of immigrants, legal and illegal, and I will tell you right now, they don't come here to live off of, you know, the government teeth. You know, they're not here to come for welfare. They're here to work hard, you know. They're coming here to work. They'll work several jobs. Mm-hmm. And what they, especially the Latins, they really work to see their kids prosper. You know, now, some of them actually, I got one good friend who came in here and, you know, he came from Costa Rica, enlisted in the Navy to two reasons, expedite his citizenship and get his GI Bill. worked three jobs the first 2 years of while he was attending college, and then managed after he got his associate, landed a job with the shipyard where they're like, hey, not only are we going to pay you, but we're also going to allow you to finish your degree. And then went home for his master's, okay? Hardworking individual. You know, anybody that tells me, well, I don't have the time to go to college, I'm like, this guy did. He worked three jobs and still went to college. It's just how bad do you want it? And the immigrants coming in here, that's one thing they know. They want to work hard. The question is, how many jobs do we have for them in this country? I've rambled enough. You know, I'll let you guys discuss this.
So I would like to just – so I'm looking at the, you know, basically what are human rights? And if you go and you look at the history of human rights, you know, it basically started with Cyrus the Great, and that was in 539, 40 B.C., long time ago. And basically when he conquered Babylon, the city of Babylon, he went in and he did something that was just unheard of. He freed all the slaves and told them, go back home, and said, told people just whatever religion you want, you know, choose whatever religion you want. So he gave people the freedom from slavery. And that's the first, the first form of civil rights. And then of course you've got the Magna Carta of 1215. And then, of course, there were others. Of course, ours, United States Declaration of Independence. But there's 30 basic human rights, and
right.
So, you know, they're writing this in a way that it's understandable by even children, and I think it's great. So I went and I got this book through for humanrights.org. So look at that up, folks. Youth, Y-O-U-T-H, four, that's F-O-R, humanrights.org. And go look that up. And you can order this free of charge. You can take a class, and, you know, that's not free, but you can take a class on it. But as you were saying, Father Michael, we're all born free and equal. And number two, you know, don't discriminate. You know, it's basically put out, you know, this document is written on the level of a child, but it should be so easy for anybody to comprehend that says these rights belong to everybody, you know, to don't discriminate, and a right to life. We have a right, the right to life and to live in freedom and safety. And there should be no slavery for number four. Number five, no torture, as you said. Number six, you have rights no matter where you go. That's what it says. Then number seven, we're all equal before the law. We should all have a fair trial. Now, you're not going to get that all over the country. And as Rich said, and you know, Rich says things that are just the way that it is. And it's a terrible thing, but, you know, it had to be said. What he said is right. You know, these all sound great, but they're not going to be great unless you have the people, you know, the people of America implemented the change. You talked about Martin Luther King. We can implement this change and demand that our policies not support dictatorships or countries that are denying basic human rights. Number eight in this human rights, your human rights are protected by law.
That's right.
No unfair detainment in human right number nine. Number 10. Everyone has a right to trial. Or, number 11, innocent before proven guilty. Number 12, this is an interesting one. Absolutely, Magna Carta.
Yeah.
Number 12, the right to privacy. You know?
Yes.
Number 13, you should have the freedom to move. You should be able to go where you want in our own country and travel as we wish. Number 14, the right to seek a safe place to live. That's what most of these immigrants are doing, folks. They're trying to find a safe place to live. You know, they don't want to die. I mean, I see this thing, and I'm just telling you, it's just, if this is the only way to fix this. Is we've got to be more voiced. We got to be more vocal with our elected officials and tell them, you know, this just isn't cutting it. You're sitting there, you know, we're sitting there. We've got a group of politicians that you hear them all the time. They beat their fist on a desk. We're going to stop this illegal immigration. Well, stop the reason why they are illegally immigrating in the first place.
That's right, at least, Jane.
You know, and Father Michael, yes. You tell me if I'm wrong. There's 30 human rights, 15 right to nationality. We have a right to belong to a country. Omar wants to belong to Djibouti. You know, he wants to go back to his country, but he can't because they'll kill him. You know?
Yeah.
Number 16, marriage and family. Everyone has a right to marry and have a family. Number 17, rights to own, the right to your own things. You know,
property. Yeah.
Yep, the right to property. Number 18, freedom of thought. Freedom of thought. Number 19,
and religion.
That's right.
And
freedom
religion.
Of thought and religion. Freedom of expression. Number 19. We can make up our own minds. Number 20, and this is a good one, the right to public assembly.
Yep.
A peaceful public assembly. Not burning down buildings, not carrying on like a bunch of hyenas, assembly to come together and say, hey, look, this isn't right. Number 21 is the right to democracy. So it says we all have a right to take part in the government of our country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's so right. And it talks about 22, Social Security, which essentially is, and it's not our form of Social Security, but we all have a right to affordable housing, medicine, you know, health care, education, child care. You know, this $2 a day,
you
I can't even imagine that.
You know what's interesting,
James,
here about that also talks about duty. So we're about responsible citizens that have to push and be all meant to be at Harvard. As a matter of fact, I critiqued it. And rights and responsibilities. So no one is just saying we want rights. No. We have duties, even as Rich was saying. These people have come. They want the right to work and keep their money. And that's 23, of course.
Yeah, that's exactly right. 23, workers' rights. 24, it says we all have a right to rest from work and to relax. It says the right to play. This is actually written for kids, but isn't it cool, though? You know, they're teachings. You have a right to play. Number 25 is you have a right to food and shelter for all. What a horrible, horrible thing to deny people food. And I'm not talking about, you know, giving everybody a free ride either, you know, but to say, you know, it's obscene the way that people treat each other. Humanity is crying out, you know, to God, you know, saying, help me. And these human rights, I think, are, you know, I really believe that if you read this, you can see the teachings of Christ in these human rights. You can see God's will, you know, whatever your religion is. You know, there are, you know, there are religions out there that we all have the basic fundamental belief in a deity that, you know, is good, okay, and is a creator of all, that also believes that we should treat each other a certain way. You know, 26.
And even revisiting 24, if I can real quickly, revisiting.
Absolutely.
You talked about this, the scripture, the Sabbath, rest. Everyone has a right to rest and leisure, including reasonable limitation of working hours and periodic holidays with pay.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to treat one another not like servitude, plenish. We have to recreate. Mm-hmm. And that's the Sabbath principle of Scripture.
There you go.
You know, it's 7 days of slavery. 6 days thou shalt work. You can work 12-hour days, many of us do, but you have to rest and replenish. Otherwise, you're no good. You burn out.
Yeah, you're right. They work you until you're dead. And, and you know, that's been done. 26, the right to education.
Amen.
Number 27, copyright. You know, there's a special law about, you know, that you're entitled to enjoy and to have your things, you know, copyrighted, you know. 28 is a fair and free world. There must be proper order so we can all enjoy rights and freedoms in our own country and all over the world. You all probably remember, you know, I guess I'm trying to think, and I guess it would have been the late 70s into the 80s that there was a lot of travel and tourism all over the world. You know, people were just flying here, flying there. And then, you know, terrorism, you know, you remember people would hijack airplanes and cruise ships. You know, they threw that poor guy in a wheelchair, threw him off of a cruise ship. And these things made our ability, you know, to live in a fair and free world almost non-existent because everybody was living in fear. And I think we need that. Number 29 is responsibility. I love this one. Hey, this is the one. This is the one. We have a duty to other people.
That's right.
We should protect their rights and freedoms. You know? And the last one, is no one can take away your human rights. No one. But unfortunately, it is done all the time. And they take them away by killing people, you know, unjustly, unrighteously, wrongfully, you know. You know, it's one thing to go to war and you know, kill the enemy because they're trying to kill you. It's a whole other thing to go and drag people out who are unarmed, you know, and drag them out in the streets and shoot them. You know, and this happens. And I know Rich talked about the drug cartels, and he's right. You know, that's an issue. But when you look at things like what's going on in Africa, that's not a drug cartel issue. You know, that's essentially a, you know, a governance issue. And I know we're not in the business. Yeah. And how do we, and I want us to think about this, and then I want to get you and Omar to talk some, Father Michael, because here's the interesting part here. You know, Omar comes from, you know, Djibouti. And, you know, they have, you know, their faith is Islam, right? Is that right, Omar? You all?
Right,
okay.
Right.
That's your faith. And Omar fought against terrorists who, you know, perverted their faith, you know, and conducted things, you know, really, really bad things. And, of course, we have Christians that do the same thing. I mean, there's... you know, Hitler was supposedly, you know, a Christian, you know, but look at all the evil and the wicked that he did. And so I don't think that we blame it on the religion. What we do is we blame, put the blame where the blame belongs. And the blame belongs on just wicked, wicked people. And so Omar and Father Michael, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about, you know, the faith part of this and how can, you know, we can, how can we put together, come together as two different faiths? And how do we apply the human rights issue in a country of Islam and a country of Christian faith? How do we do that?
Omar said something interesting earlier about accountability. As far as the government being accountable to the people. But I think we first start with looking at the fact that we have to be accountable to God, that we will give an answer for our behavior, for our conduct, not only the way we've related to God, but the way we've related to one another. And I think that's a big part. You know, it's both vertical and horizontal. And so when he said that earlier about accountability, we most definitely, in our faith, as soon as a man or woman dies, there's an immediate judgment. And then we believe that there will be a great judgment. And that might be where people are rewarded or whatever. But immediately, it's like you give an account for your life. And I think if people don't have that perspective and they treat others who are also made in the image of God disparagingly, I think we're going to be accountable. And I think that people can't get away with their behavior. You know, they might think that they're outsmarting people and they're subduing people by their riches. But eventually, just like Omar said, there has to be an accounting, a day of accountability. And so I think there's where we have to give a different vantage point to the people. You're not only accountable to yourself. You're not only accountable to riches. You're going to be accountable to God. And part of our accountability is the way we treat one another. In our faith, the Judeo-Christian faith, it's loving God with all of our minds, heart, soul, and strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. And I think if we can't start there, basically treating one another because we're made in the image of God and because we're given an account to God for the way we behaved, I think that has to put us on a different plane. And there's where the intangible, you know, I mentioned something about Poland. You know, they had great oppression by the communists. And Omar may not be familiar with that, but the people wanted God. They didn't want a distortion of God. They didn't want to be dominated. Natural law tells us, you don't have to make laws to tell people that they were not created to be dominated by other people or to be mistreated. We know this behavior is wrong. So I think just getting back to the word accountability, that we will give an account for our behavior when we have our interview with God upon death.
Omar.
I agree. Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, you know, it's the same religion. Some of, you know, the Muslims, they think that only Muslims will go to the paradise. But Muslims, it's not like an identity. I think a guy who's, you know, living in the North Pole who never heard about Islam or Christianity or, you know, religion or God, who is surviving and just, you know, hunting and living and is a good person, you cannot say he's going to go to hell. So the people that we were fighting, for example, back when I was deployed as a company commander in Somalia, 2012 to 2014, something really crazy, you know, I saw a lot of crazy stuff there. When we have seized the headquarters of Group Al-Shabaab in the central region of Bole Bourde, we took off, you know, from our base in Beledweyne, which is the capital of the central region of Somalia, and it was like a 24-hour offensive. Anyway, when we have seized, after, you know, a combat a couple miles at the entry of, you know, the objective, which was Bole Bourde, the second, you know, city of central region in Somalia. We have seized, you know, the town, and we kicked out, you know, the terrorist group there. People there were so happy because they were so oppressed. They did not have the right to have a telephone. They did not have to have the choice to do the prayer or not to do. So here is one thing. In the Quran, for example, God said, hey, I created life and death to see everyone conduct. If you will be a good person, do the right thing, or be a bad person, you will be accountable. You know, like, you know, my friend is saying, we have to be accountable to ourselves, to God, and to the humanity. So
yes,
in Djibouti, what happened, and I agree also with what was said before, I'm not demanding, you know, the American to do the job for me and go there and liberate, you know, with military, or, you know, use the Camp Le Monnier to attack or to kick out the dictator. No, I'm asking the U.S. Policy, foreign policy, and especially the one with my country, to not to sponsor the nepotism in Djibouti. This is a small family who is holding us as a hostage since 44 years. This is nepotism. This is what I'm asking. Not to sponsor the nepotism through putting the diplomatic pressure on what we are talking about, and which is, you know, the most important thing, the human rights. You have 2 million of African immigrants to America. You have 500,000 African who are crossing, you know, the Mediterranean Sea, and 70% of them will die there. They don't know how to swim. Most of them are women, are kids. They'll be drowned. So because Western countries and Western policy or China policy are just sponsoring this nepotism and dictatorship, we just, you know, demand diplomatic pressure and saying, hey, you are violated basic human rights. We are giving you money. The money is going on your own pockets. Starting from now, we're going to be accountable from you. When you are sick, you do not, you know, go to the local hospital, but you go and fly to the United States or to Europe, while your people, they don't have access to healthcare, to clear water, to electricity. This is, you know, the pressure that the Americans should put on the representative who will, you know, put the pressure then back in these countries. You know, Djibouti is an example among other, you know, countries. And this is how we're going to fight immigration. Africa is the most richest, is the richest country in resources, you know? They have gold.
Natural resources,
they have, we have, I can give you the six. You have oil, so Nigeria, Angola, Egypt, Sudan. You have diamonds, you have copper, you have cobalt, you have timber, you have everything in Africa. But the problem is a small group of people who are taking advantage of that and creating instability. And this is what's going to happen in Djibouti, the same thing that happened now in Ethiopia, the same thing that happened in Mali, in Guinea. But you have some patriots who took over the country. So in Chad, I forget to tell you that, a couple months ago, it was in April 2020, the president, a dictator, who were ruling 30 years, he died. He was, you know, visiting the front line, and he died there. We don't know how he really, you know, exactly died there. So who took over? His son. His son was the general chief of staff, and he just took over. He said, hey, I'm creating a military council for a transition. And guess what happened? France, because they have big interest there, and because the son of the, you know, killed dictator were doing a good business with France, the French president displaced to Chad and made officially from this, you know, the son of the dictator, the new president of Chad. A couple months later, the special force commander took over Mali, and this coup were denounced by France, while by the same way, 1 month before, they were supporting and sponsoring and making official the coup of the son of the dictator. This is crazy. So that's why American policy should be, you know, get rid of that and promote, you know, democracy and human rights and start accountability, you know, on these countries, you know.
Omar, we spoke last week, and I mentioned the nepotism, and, you know, you elaborated on it again tonight. What do you think is the real root of greed? Why do you feel that people are so motivated by greed and they can watch others suffer right under their noses put it all in their pockets, line their pocket? What would you say, just from your culture, what are the roots of greed? Why are they so motivated to want so much for themselves? And we saw that happen in other regimes. Rich was talking about Stalin before. What would you say is the real motivation for greed?
These people are, you know, like sponsored by evil. They don't have a faith. Mm-hmm. They don't have,
yes,
you know, any empathy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they are like, you know, possessed people. So, and we know how they you know, how is the end, you know, of this kind of people. You know,
right.
For example, the dictator in Djibouti, you know, he has a lot of real estate properties in France and in other parts of the world. But most of, you know, the wealth is in France. But guess what's going to happen? He's sponsored by the France since now, you know, 44 years. He was, you know, during the first 20 years, the chief of national security. And after that, he became president, you know, through his uncle who just gave him the hand.
Right.
And so what they're going to do, he's injecting a lot of money there. They know that as soon as the people are going to rise up and everything, and that they cannot control anymore, you know, supporting him, they will just take everything that he's possessing back in France. So they are, you know, double winner. They don't care, you know. These people, I don't know how to explain that, but they are just faithless, because every religion,
right,
Christian, is fighting against corruption.
See, when you make money your God, I think you're absolutely right. It's a lack of faith and trust in God. Yeah. You're trusting in yourself. You're trusting in money. You're trusting in people. The Psalms say, you know, some trust in princes, some trust in horses, some trust in the strength of a man, but our trust,
yeah,
is in the Lord our God. And it really is a misdirected trust. And, you know, how much is enough when people around you, I mean, it's like eating a big steak dinner or something, and you see people who are just looking for a crumb, and you want more and more and more. Something's wrong with that. Your trust and your faith is in the wrong place, and your heart is hardened. It's not. You mentioned compassion and empathy, and you know, they're hard-hearted. Again, they raise themselves up to being God themselves, rather than recognizing,
yes,
that we're here to serve humanity.
Yeah. God, in his, you know, in the Quran, God, you know, described this kind of people. He said, you know, God said in his Quran that this,
mm-hmm,
kind of people, their heart become like more stronger and harder than a rock. This is,
yes,
how, you know, it is described. And once again,
mm-hmm,
for the people who listen to me, I personally, Omar Hassan, I believe that people who are, you know, who were in their life good people and did the right thing and had compassion, and who did not grow up as a Muslim, you know, I believe that they will go in paradise. Because, you know, the definition of Muslim, our prophet says, the Muslim is the one who's not aggressing the other verbally and physically. You see? This is the meaning of Muslim. So anyone,
mm-hmm,
who's not aggressing people, you know, verbally, means someone who's peace, who is living peacefully. So that's why I believe that, you know, Christianity, Islam, everything is about on, you know, a way of life. If you are, you know, living, if you are grateful to God, to, you know, what you have and others did not have, you know, God gave us so, you know, a lot of things that we, you know, cannot be grateful, you know, to that. So you have to be grateful for the life that you have, for the minimum that you have, that the other do not have. And you have to respect the other. And you have to share, you know, with other your vision, you know, but you do not have the right to force people, to oppress people. Like, you know, the terrorists that I was fighting in Somalia, they were forcing people to go and pray. And then I had some conversation with them, you know, on they were calling me, you know, they had my number to, you know, the some of the Somalian who were, you know, exchanging my number. So they had my number, some of them, and they were calling me and saying to me, hey, why are you fighting against us? And I was saying, hey, you are not God. People will be judged on the judgment day by God. So how can you force people to follow your rules? This is not the way it is. You are playing the role of God. You did not gift this life to people, so you don't have the right to behead people because they don't do the five-time pray. No, you don't have the right to do that. Everyone should have the right,
For our faith characterizes God's nature as love. If God is love and we're supposed to be like love, we can never treat people contrary to that. We're told even in our faith to love our enemies. And what you said earlier, and I'm not talking about not sizing or dealing with someone that needs to be disciplined in a righteous manner, in a just manner. But you were saying earlier, and also I'm talking philosophically, you know, God will judge us in light of the understanding and the light that we have. But if we have the proper understanding of loving God, serving God, and treating others right, and we don't, then we're going to be judged because we haven't fulfilled the illumination, the light that we had received. Now, you know, Isa, you know, for us, Jesus is the light. He's the Son of God. He's God incarnate. But every person in his pursuit, in her pursuit of seeking God, God will give them light, but you have to walk in that light. And as we stated last time we talked, the evil one, people are possessed by the evil one. They're doing things that are not conveying the nature of God, which is love, but the nature of selfishness and hatred and everything else. So I really believe that they've become gods unto themselves. And when that happens, then people begin to think they can dominate other people.
Exactly.
So Father Michael, who are you talking to? Are you right now talking to the rulers of the country? Or are you talking to everybody who's subjected to those rulers? Because
I'm talking to everybody.
They're not getting the message. You know, you're absolutely right. That's it. And here's the thing, you know, for people who want on the left, who want to say religion is the problem. No.
Right.
The extremist interpretation of any religion is a problem.
That's right. Yes.
If you look at the fundamentals of almost every religion, they have to deal with man living in harmony with other men. And that is, you know, not generic, you know, like men and women, all that. And man's relation, trying to define man's relationship with God. Okay. But the thing is, when you are in power, your concern, you know, you look at wealth and all this stuff, and a lot of those people, you know, most of those people consider themselves good people. I don't think anybody I don't think there's a rich person out there who sees themselves as evil, okay? They may do evil things, but I don't think they see themselves as evil. And mm-hmm. so the ruling sub-clan of Djibouti, I don't think they see themselves as evil. So you can sit there and describe this all they want. And they can probably, just like the progressives of the Democratic Party, can justify that they're not evil. I'm being facetious, all right, because
no, or just like the ultra-right side,
yeah,
right?
They're on both sides. Yeah, yeah. James, I'm just throwing it out there to poke a stick at you. Okay?
Unfortunately.
They're on both
sides,
right?
Speak to power.
Right,
we have
right.
to be prophetic.
The point is, okay, so here's the deal. All right. How do you change things? Now, the younger Rich Kilblaine was a Green Beret. And my solution is overthrow the damn government. And I'm the guy like, Omar, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to show you how to do it. The problem is, I know. The problem is, there are actually three primary missions in Special Forces. One is unconventional warfare, where we go in and we're like, Omar, I'm going to tell you how to, I'm going to coach you on how to overthrow your country. And then there is foreign, the terms changed a number of times, IDAD and then FID, foreign internal defense. This is where you go in like Afghanistan or whatever, and you're like, we're here to train the host nation military to defeat the insurgents, the guys we really want to be. And then there's all this collection of direct action, counterterrorism, all this other stuff, the survival, escape, and the resistance, and the invasion, all that stuff, okay? But the unfortunate thing is when you start killing people, when does the killing end?
That's right.
Now I'm older, okay? Now I'm 66. I got four wars under my belt. And I'm like, okay, I'm probably not going to get caught. Look, I really enjoy going to war. And I'm probably not going to get called back for it. And you look at it going, okay, so when does the killing stop? So after you remove the assholes in power, who do you replace them with? And what happens in Rwanda is the worst case example where once you remove the people, you go after their entire tribe because you justify it in your mind that tribe or that clan or that sub-clan is the problem and we have to completely eradicate it, okay? So, anyway, now I'm getting to
I can answer that to that.
Go ahead.
All right, you are fully right. So we are, you know, men of action. You know, I was, you know, commanding in special units, and I was responsible for anti-guerrilla back in the north. Yeah, you know, we like, you know, to do that. But you have to know we are encouraging first course of action is the diplomacy, bringing awareness, showing the people that they have. That this country is really rich, but they are really poor because of a system. And you talked about, you know, Rwanda. It's not going to happen in Djibouti because we are also showing the Djiboutian that even if it is nepotism in Djibouti, it's a small minority of them, and they have people from the other clans who are, you know, collaborating with them. This small sub-clan, this small family is holding the defense, security, you know, diplomacy, and all the apparatus, the sensitive apparatus. They are controlling the country. But we have some who are, you know, relatives of them who are, you know, also suffering. So the first course of action is diplomacy, you know, on diplomacy. Bringing awareness that, you know, it's a whole system that we have to get rid of, even if it's a family who is, you know, ruling over the country. So I can assure you that Rwanda is not going to happen in Djibouti. But what is going to happen is that you will have certainly a big, big problem between the USA and China. So
yeah.
James said that China, you know, gives $20 million, but I want to remind you that they have injected $14 billion in the infrastructure.
All right. Let me step in, because we don't have a lot of time, and this is something I wanted to bring up, and you nailed it. All right. First of all, I want to remind everybody, as you said, China owns 70% of Djibouti's debt. They own that much debt in most countries, even our country, okay? But they're only paying $20 million for use for the real estate that they've got. We're paying $63 million for less. And here's the thing I want to bring up. So from our perspective, a geopolitical perspective, in all honesty, we don't care about anybody's human rights. That's the honest truth. We are no longer going to get involved in wars of regime change. Why would we want to change the regime? Is because we want them to be more humanitarian, okay? We're not going to do that. That Biden has already stated that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
However, we look at it, we're paying $63 million. China's paying $20 million. We shouldn't be paying that much. And the thing is, so when we look at it, there's a debate right now in the world arena. That's what I want to bring up in the short time we have. In the world arena, Russia, China believe that democracy is a failure, that autocracy, a government where you have a leader who is in charge for a long time, not for every 4 years and then he runs again. That's the whole point, is the people that got us into the war in Afghanistan were replaced by people who thought this war went too long. They didn't have the same conviction, and they want to pull out. But China and Russia don't have that problem. Their leaders are in there till they almost die. So they think long term. And they don't care about civil rights or human rights. They're all about economy. And they're going, so their approach to Djibouti is we're going to control your debt. We're going to control the people that rule. We're not going to tell you how to run your business. We don't care how you run your business. Look, China has no respect for democracy. Look what they're doing to Hong Kong. They have absolutely no respect for any democracy or human rights in any other country. And let me tell you this much. If they start flexing, you know, the reason they control the debt is because they loan these countries money with the collateral is if you default on your loan, we own your ports. And they'll do it because that money, as we've already discussed, does not go down to the people. It only goes down to the ruling parties. So they don't, that when you say they own the debt, they own people who run the countries, and they don't care how they rule as long as China gets what they do. And they believe they are going to win in the end because that kind of autocracy is more functional in the world economy than democracy.
But the truth is, Rich, that a true democracy and true capitalism are not bad things. People have made them bad. And, you know, we've had this discussion before that when you look at capitalism, you know, there's people that will say it almost the same way they say communism. Well, the truth of the matter is capitalism is an opportunity for people to elevate themselves out of poverty through their own works. But it will never work as long as we continue to support the crony capitalism that created things like the industrial military complex that Dwight Eisenhower warned us about. And also, democracy will never work as long as democracy is veiled. True democracy will work. Democracy that is veiled by a undertone of socialism and communism, you know, that really is trying to sell a bill of goods to make you sound like it's going to be good. But realistically, they don't really support true democracy, because true democracy would allow people, all people, to have a voice. The Chinese are flexing their muscles. Go ahead.
James, Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, 1776, gave ethical parameters around capitalism. And there have been a lot of popes that have talked about unrestrained. We talked about greed, and that's really something. You know, we have a republic, you know, the true democracy, like Athens, where Socrates had to drink the hemlock. And you're absolutely right. It's a better system, but because of our nature, which is bent toward greed, there have to be ethical parameters around it. And Adam Smith in Wealth of Nations, 1776, put those down, because I've read it, those particular ethical parameters. And so I just think we want to say that that's important, because there are a lot of people that are destroying, that don't understand the restraint. You know, you don't need a 24-carat toilet seat. You know what I'm saying? And the other thing is, we do have representative, we're a republic. And so, yeah, we entrust with people, but you're absolutely right. It's a good system. It's a better system. But we, because of our bent nature of sin, have to have some moral parameters around it so it doesn't get abused.
You know, and we've only got 3 minutes left, so but next week, let's talk about true capitalism, because, you know, I am, you know, and Rich likes to poke at me, but I'm really a conservative guy. I really am. Now, I'm fiscally conservative. I'm socially liberal, I guess. I guess that's what they would have called Jesus Christ, too, because, you know, Christ believed in feeding the people and not allowing people to be abused and misused. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if that's the way that people view me, then fine, I'm okay with that. But ultimately, I'd love to have this discussion on, you know, the role of a, you know, true capitalist society that is built around a republic or a democracy. How, you know, because a democracy, and I think that's the other thing, you know, is we need to identify, you know, what is a real democracy, you know, not the fake, and what's a real, you know, level of capitalism, not the crony capitalism. And by the way, America is ate up with crony capitalism. We say that everybody has the ability to make their own way, but that's not true. I'm going to just tell you that right now. There are so many barriers. Right. Yeah, there's so many barriers. And you know, as well as I do, Father Michael, we've seen it based on race, sex, religion, you name it. You know, it's you're too short, you're too fat, you're too tall, you're too skinny. You know, there are things that are put into place to kind of hinder people from actually being able to achieve the goals.
Yes,
so
that's right.
So anyway, so we got a minute left. I want to thank everybody for being on the show tonight. Omar, thank you for coming on again.
No problem. We'd love
to have you back on.
Thank you.
Folks, if you want to support Omar in his effort, go to the website independence.org. That's independence.org. And there is a link to support the effort in Djibouti. And that money is going to be put to good use to develop advocacy efforts and diplomacy efforts so that we can build a relationship with this country and help to get Omar's family out and then get them all back once that they establish a level of democracy and freedom in Djibouti, and you heard Omar himself tell you that. He's willing to go over there and fight for it. He just doesn't want to fight against all that U.S. money that's going in to support it. So, folks, support him. God bless each and every one of you. Be good to each other.
God bless
and
you
have
all.
A great weekend.
God bless you all. Bye.
God bless you all. Have a good night.
Bye.